yesterday we got up to the bottom of Samach Zayin Amud Bet, the two dots. So we just finished up quickly the sugya of tzedakah, and then back to the obligations of the ksuba. So first, Rabbi Abba Habetzair Zuzei Besudre, he used to wrap up, you know, money in his sudar, in his, you know, handkerchief, a shadele achore, and then throw it behind him. And then he would show up in the places where there were aniyim. So he used to let the aniyim, basically he wouldn't look back, but he'd have it behind him so the aniyim could come and take the money without being embarrassed. Right? So, you know, the Rambam goes through a list of different levels of tzedakah. You know, their levels of the best levels of how to give tzedakah, and then he goes down and then goes down through the levels about what is a less proper way to give tzedakah. So one of the levels that he mentions is this level here, Rabbi Abba, where Rabbi Abba did not know who was taking the money, but the aniyim knew who was giving them. Right? So obviously a higher level would be if the aniyim didn't know who was giving, and he didn't know who he was giving to. But here, Rabbi Abba went with the money behind him, so he wouldn't embarrass them, but the aniyim had to come and take it from him. So, but umatzli eni miramai, but he would keep his eyes on the lookout for cheaters, for people coming who shouldn't be taking money from him. So B'chanina had this poor person that he used to send him four zuz every Arab Shabbos. One time he sent it with his wife. Atai, she came, Amrlei, lo tzarich, he doesn't need it. But my chazit, I said, what did you see? They were asking, what are you going to eat on today? Tlei kesef or tlei zahav? Are you going to use mapot, like napkins or tablecloths of pit linen or of silk? Tzvuot. And Rashi says they were colored. I mean, things that were not necessary were extraordinary, right? So now, well, you have a difference, because earlier on, remember we had, and yesterday's story is where his son went or his wife went, and he said they don't need it because he's having fat chickens, and he's having wine. They're throwing for him wine. Why is that? How's that different over here? And that's, he says, Tosfos points it out too, that, I mean, it seems almost a little bit obvious, but over there it was the food that they were being mafunach about, right? It was the actual things. Over here, it's what he's being served on. That's not something that you said, right? Unless you're wealthy, there's no reason to have how it's served, but then, rather than what is served.
Although we saw the Gemara before, they ran from in front of horses and all that, which would be more like mapos.
Right.
Food.
I mean, that, you have to go de machzero, right?
De machzero, even running. Running is not like food. It's, you know.
Right, that's a level of kava. But here it sounds like he was a aniya. He was a poor person, right, that didn't... And he was just providing, he thought he was providing him food, and here he is, you know, wealthy person.
The difference between here and the horse case is, the horse case, if you're poor, you can't sell your kava. But here, if he was really poor, he could have sold his kava.
Okay. It's like food. I mean, it's like, my post would sell it. And
so now, he says a very important line. He says major ramifications. Amar Hainu Dam Rabbi Lozer. This is what Kenia says, what Rabbi Lozer says. Bo benach sik tova la remoyim. We should give a big ashkoyach to the cheaters. If it wasn't for them, we'd be sinners every day. It says right in the Varim, when it says if you are withhold, you know, giving loans or taking care of the aniyim, they're going to call out to Hashem and you'll be a choteh. The Tani Rabbi Chir bar Rabbi Difti, Rabbi Shuv ben Karcha Omer, kolamadim inav v'net tzedakah. Anyone who looks away when they're supposed to be giving tzedakah, or where there's a need for tzedakah, gilo oved avodas kachavim, it's as if they're worshiping avodas zara. Tivhacha yishamar lecha peniyed dvarim levavcha bli'al. Tivhatam yatsu anashim b'nei bli'al. So you see the term bli'al is used both by avodas zara and over here by tzedakah. Malahalan avodat kachavim, afkar avodat kachavim. And so he says we have to give machzik tova the ramayim because they give us the opportunity to say, why we didn't give tzedakah. Meaning that if there were no cheaters, then if you didn't give tzedakah, you would be in trouble right away. You'd be a choteh right away. The fact that there are cheaters gives us something to be tola on the reason that we don't give tzedakah in every instance or the right amount. So it's an unbelievable statement by Rabbi Lozer, but it does have major ramifications, and even today it does. It's, you know, otherwise every time somebody showed up and you didn't give or you didn't have the right, you know, didn't look into it, you'd be in trouble. And now it's today where the people, it's not always the most honest thing, and therefore you have to, you can be discerning, even without a chet, you know. Although generally, I think even the Rambam brings down that we shouldn't turn away anybody. Like, meaning that if someone comes to your door, it's funny that in the hierarchies of tzedakah, they say if someone comes to your door, you don't have to give them a lot of money, but you can give them but you should give them a small amount. You should never turn somebody away without anything, but you don't have to give them large amounts of money just because they come to your door.
What if he comes to your door with a haskama from respect, or with respect, his name spelled wrong?
Well, there, this is Rabbi Elazar. He's saving you. So here, someone who pretends. So on this line of thinking of someone who is cheating to get tzedakah, so someone who makes himself look like he's blind, or someone who is looking like his stomach is swollen. I mean, I assume that means out of hunger, right? Or someone who makes it look like they are lame and somehow, that his leg is, you know, that he needs a wheelchair, whatever it is. You know, niftar min olam achivali dekach. I mean, if he acts that way, that's the way he'll end up. I'm a kabel tzedakah ein tzarech, right? Lekach, someone who takes tzedakah when it's not necessary. Sofo inu niftar min olam achivali dekach. Then Hashem will ensure that he reaches the level where he needs the tzedakah and is no longer taking it inappropriately. So Tanan Hatam, we have a mission over there. Mechayven who told him korat beito v'et kli tashmisho. That we don't force him to sell his possessions in order to avoid going onto the tzedakah rolls. Velo, is that true? V'atanya yemishtamish v'klizo v'yishtamish v'lekhei kesef. That if he was using gold kelim before, sell them and use silver kelim. V'kli kesef yishtamish v'klei nechoshet. If he was using silver, he should downgrade to copper. Summer of Tzvid, Lo Kasha, Haba Mita B'Shulchan, Haba Kosot V'Karot. Depends what you're talking about. Right, so if I was to, I don't know, when I first read this, when I was learning this Gemara, I would have suggested which way, which would you have said is which? Mita and Shulchan and Kosot V'Karot. Which would you say?
Shulchan is one he doesn't have to.
He doesn't have to, and Kosot V'Karot, right? He doesn't, right?
He does.
He does have to, right? So listen to this Gemara. Maishna kosu karos to lo. Right? That's the way I would have learned also, right? The Gemara. I would assume meat and shulchan are essential. So, that's up to him. Well, this is karos. That's like little, like, those are extra stuff. Gemara looks the other way. Maishna kosu karos to lo. That he doesn't have to sell them. Damar me'isuli. Because it's disgusting for him to eat, right, from these items that are not of the highest quality. Meat of a shulchan nami. Amar lo mekabel aloi. Why can't he say about his table and his bed that I can't sleep like this? It's just not comfortable. So I'm Rav Breid Rav Machresha de Kaspo. We're talking about a Machresha de Kaspo here. A Machresha obviously is a plow, but that's not what it means here. Here it means a comb, right? It's a comb that acts like a Machresha. It was a curved comb. They used to comb their bodies down, right? That was some form of, I don't know, when they went to the bathhouses and stuff like that, that they used to comb their bodies. So I don't know if that was a part of the massage or part of the cleaning process, but they had these combs that they used to run over their bodies. So he has a silver comb to run over his body. So that's what we're talking about here. So it depends if he's already in the collection agency or not. So that's it. What's the difference? What's givui or not givui? So it's generally a principle that in order to tap into the I don't know, to tap into leket shechcha and peya, and to tap into the tzedakah, you have to have less than 200 zuz. Right? If you have more than 200 zuz, then you're disqualified from tapping in there because you're considered to have enough money to buy yourself meals and to get through the week. Right? So we only let you tap into those areas when you have less than 200 zuz. So that's what Rashi says. So if he came before us, if he came before us prior to having less than 200 zuz, right, and then he took, then we ask him to give it back, right, and we force him to sell because then we're asking him to pay back. Then we force him to sell the stuff. If he came when it was less than 200 zuz, meaning that he was entitled to take, then we're not govim mimenu. We're not going to take it back from him, and then he's not lid giva. We don't force him to sell stuff. So we want to see that Rashi over here is kanch kodim b'le giva. Haditznan ein mechayven mi'ikoro koi. Right, what does it mean? Ein mechayven oto. That was before kshebali told leket. Right, he came to take leket. V'loyalo matayim zuz, and he did not have 200 zuz. V'maya mocha klitash misho ayamasig matayim zuz. If he sold his possessions, he'd have more than 200. Ein mechayven oto dimkor. We don't force him to sell to to get back over the threshold. We don't force him to sell his possessions to get over the 200 threshold so that he can take Lekin Shechron Peah. But, oh, sorry, that he won't be able to take it. V'adza Tanan Mechayvin, the case where it says that he is Chayiv to sell his stuff, so Ocho Shabali De Giboy, Ocho Shevi Atzmali De Kach, Shebez Din Gobin Amen. He put himself in a position where Bez Din's going to already collect from him. What's that? Gonjayelo Matayim Zuz. He had 200 Zuz, which meant he was not entitled to take, right, from Lekin Shechron Peah. But not till Lekin Shechron Peah, but no Dosh Osher Ayyab. Then they figure out he's an usher because he has 200 zuz, not that like a wealthy person, but he, and I mean that he's above the poverty line, right? So then, therefore, boys and buying the governor men, much not all. They come back to take back what he took, meaning that he stole from the aniyim in the sense that he took when he wasn't supposed to. If he cannot repay it, at this point, we force him to sell his stuff. We make him sell his higher level stuff and downgrade to lower level stuff.
So
that's whether it's based in is. So the question the Gemara asked, right? We have two brightos, right? One brighto says that you're allowed, if we force him to downgrade, we force him to sell his possessions in order to not go on the tzedakah rolls. And the other one said that we don't force him to sell his stuff. So Rashi is saying that depends on the circumstance. If he comes before us and he has less than 200 zuz, he's already poor, we don't sell his possessions to get him above the poverty line again. We let him take Lekha Sheikh Kampay, and that's it. If he was above 200 when he came, and he took inappropriately, so Beis Din then has the right to go back and take it back from him. So if they go back and now he doesn't have it, they can sell it down on his
possessions. And that's the answer to the question?
That's not. That was another suggestion about the answer. That was it.
Possible.
That was one. We said that's not the answer now.
No, but was,
what was the answer? That was something. Machshesh Kesef is something that was, you know, meaning that he should downgrade. Meaning that when it's something like that, it's already.
So it's not about Kaylee, it's not about that. It's about
Machshesh Kesef. That already is a little bit. Right, a little bit much. So then we say that he can downgrade. In that instance, he should downgrade because that's not something that's you know, mifunak. That's like beyond. That's almost, yeah. I think. That's not dealing with eating and sleeping and the basics, you know, of living, where you can say that it's molus alai or that it's lok mekubal alai. Alright. Tosfos just as a note, Tosfos learns otherwise here, that gavoy here is depending on, excuse me, Rabbeinu Tam says, look in the middle of the Tosfos, kan shebal achar lidei givoy, in the middle, like where there's a bet for the agos abach in that Tosfos. You know, why is it better? Rabbeinu Tam Peres Kodem Shevel Yedei Givoy She'enu Tal Mekupa Shel Tzedakah. If he's not taking from the Kupa Shel Tzedakah, El Medvarim Shem Hal Shel Hefker. But Hefker stuff, like Leket Shechon Peah. So there, we don't force him to sell. I mean, if he's still taking from Hefker, and he's not taking from the Tzedakah box, then we don't force him to sell. Kan L'achar Yedei Givoy She'enu Tal Mekupa Shel Tzedakah. If he's already at the point where he's not taking out of Hefker, he's taken out of the Tzedakah box, then we say, already, come on, you got to downgrade to prevent him from going. That's already a step down, right? That's like, if he's an ani and he goes out, collects his like a chichon peah, all right, so that's fine. We don't force him to sell down. But if he's already coming to the tzibur to beyond that, to ask for tzedakah, then we say he's got to downgrade in order not to avoid going to the tzedakah box. All right, new Mishnah here. Yitoma she si'ata imo achia, a soma, right? That her mother or brother was marrying her off, midata. So here it's, she's doing it willingly. She's getting married off willingly. And in her tzupa, they give her a dowry of 150 zuz. When she gets older, she can come back and make a claim on the dowry she didn't have. Meaning, what was the dowry? We'll have to see this tomorrow a little bit. But, for instance, if her father had given a prior sister who got married a higher dowry, and now they gave her a lesser dowry, even though she acquiesced in this case, it's midato, she's getting married off on her own, you know, for her own volition, and her mother and brother give it to her and she accepts it, does not close the case. She's able to come back. Doesn't, you know, she's not running into her statute of limitations. She has the ability to come back and make a claim that she wasn't given the proper dowry. All right. Because right, her mechila, she's a ketana and she doesn't have the ability to give mechila. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, if see a tabat, Rabbi says, if he gave to the first daughter, then we should check that and see, and then give the second daughter based on that, meaning that we do an umdana. That is from the Gemara, that goes umdana, that we assess what the father would have given, and then we give it. Sometimes a person's poor and he gets more wealthy. Right? Or he was wealthy and he gets poor. We assess the amount of money he has now, and then we give based on what he has now, meaning that we don't know how much he is.
That's what I would have done. Same ratio. So if it was he had $1 million in the bank and he gave the first one 100,000, now it's $500,000 after he's dead.
Right.
Another 150,000.
But that seems to be what the Chachamim are saying. So that's what the Chachamim is there, that you
dollar
go
for dollar.
Right. Ani ve'ashir is right. I mean, if you take ani and ve'ashir, we're going to see the Gemara changes that in the Mishnah. But if you were saying that he got poor or he got rich,
you can give the same
then,
ratio.
Then you should do it on a ratio basis. That's it. I push shot of how the Chachamim. That's think what they're saying. You're just saying, no, that if there's a fixed amount he gave already, give that again. That's what the Chachamim say. Wait, his circumstances changed, so there, it should be on a ratio basis. So the Gemara is going to learn the Mishnah differently.
You could also argue about inflation.
Right. Oh, right, I mean the cost, right? That's a fair point, right? That his the cost of what he gave the dowry for was, right, was the difference at that point. So Amar Shmuel, Lefarnosa, Shomim Ba'av. For an Adunya, for a dowry, we assess the father, meaning that we... If a Yotoma is coming before us and we have to decide how much to give her, we decide, we shaman it out, we make a decision about what the father would have given in this case. So, right, that the daughters get from the estate are able to get their mizonot and get their dowries. We don't say that if her father was alive, he would give this much. We assess the possessions and we give her. So what does that sound like? My la parnasa tabal. What does it mean, parnasa for her? It sounds like a dowry, right? A parnasa for the baal. The dowry, so it sounds like what? From that brisa, we do not assess what the father would have given. We check out the possessions and we give her based on the level of the possessions now. So Menachem Yitzchak, lo, parnasat atzma. We're talking about her own parnasa to take care of her. Why does she need any support? She's eating out of the estate. Meaning that, how could you suggest that parnasa here means, you know, to feed her, to take care of her? She's already taken care of. She's eating out of the estate. And my love, achat parnasat abav, achat parnasat atzma, must be that what? Mizonot are taking care of herself. And, right, parnasa is taking care of the baal, meaning the dowry. So look, edivide parnasat atzma. No, both of them are talking about the what she's entitled to. Lokasha haba chila v'shtia haba levusha v'kisuya. She's entitled to two different things out of the estate. One is her food, her basic needs. The other one is that she's entitled to clothing.
You don't know if she's not married, right?
Right.
If it's herself or husband, is married or not married?
No. Oh, herself and her husband is. I think they're
married. Then her husband's giving her food and all that.
Yeah, but parnasat habaal means that the dowry that comes in at the time they get married.
Right. And then the second part, parnasata, shouldn't be anything until she's married. When she's married.
No, it's not married. This is prior to getting married. Meaning that the Gemara is saying that out of the estate, she's entitled to mizonot and entitled to parnasa. So what does that mean, parnasa?
Right.
So mizonot is clear that she gets food and basically.
Okay, the food that's so much if she's not married.
Right, correct.
That means it's two.
Right. Parnasa is also when she's not married, when she's going to go get married,
right,
the dowry
right.
That
so
she's entitled to.
Parnasa means when she's still not married, it has nothing to do with her husband, it has to do with
her
clothes.
Personally, right.
What does it mean with husband?
What are you trying to say? I mean, parnasot has two meanings? Is that what you're trying to say? Parnasot katani.
What's the... No, it's hadizonot umit parnasot katani. Marisa tried to say that mitparnes means mizonos. The Gemara says, but it explicitly says mizonos. So how could you suggest that parnasot is mizonot? So that's it. So the Gemara tried again to say that parnasot is about mean dowry and mizonot. Then the Gemara says, no, you could say they're both mizonot, but both her parnasot, but one means her food, her basic needs, and another one means her clothing needs. And so that's how. Therefore, it's not a problem for Shmuel. We're trying to avoid the brisa being a problem for Shmuel in the sense that what it says that you do not check how much the father would have given, right? So this goes like Shmuel by saying what here they say assess the level of his possessions. So that's not like Shmuel. So we solve the problem by saying it has nothing to do with dowry. That's how the Gemara solved the problem. Okay. Tnan v'chamim umrim pamim shadam ani ve'ashir or ashir ve'ani elashemen nechasim notim la ma ani uma ashir. So again, at that part, you could talk poor. He got poor. He got rich. Means that his levels change. If he's poor, it means that he's he lost money. He doesn't have as much as he had before. Ashir b'nechasim. Rich means that he got rich in possessions. Problem with suggesting that the chamim are that way is what? That means that the Tanakhama suggests what? That she gets the same amount even if he came poor. Right? How less like he can't pay it anymore. He just doesn't have the money to do it. So it makes no sense. Ella love ani ani bedat, ashir ashir bedat. So what does it mean, ani and eshir? It means that his miserliness or his generosity changed. There's sometimes that a person's very generous and they become more miserly, or they were miserly and become more generous. So that's what it means, ani v'eshir. And you see what? That even though that we're talking about his decision, which will be an umdana, like Shmuel, right? Anyway, but not in law, and we give her, we check the nechassim out, and we give her. We don't check out what the father would give, we only check out the nechassim. Ama lo azlinin butter umdino. But to you, the Shmuel, see that we don't go by what the father would have given. We give an objective standing of how much, what his possessions are now. And that'd be a problem for Shmuel. Shmuel says, shamin ba'av. We think about how much the father would have given. Who damarik Rabbi Yehuda? He holds like Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda fits right like him in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says, right, if he gave to the first daughter this way, he'll give to the second daughter this way. It's not Rabbi Yehuda Merimasi, but the Rishona, Yitain Lashnia, Kaderek Shanatan the Rishona, that he would give like they gave to the first one. Venema Aloha Rabbi Yehuda. So why doesn't Shmuel just say Aloha like Rabbi Yehuda? Right, Shmuel's in Amora, you could just say the Aloha goes like Rabbi Yehuda. See, Amar Aloha Rabbi Yehuda, Avamina Dafka Sia. That only time Rabbi Yehuda believes that we go after what the father would have given is if he already married off a daughter to Galidate, because he's shown us what he wants to do. Of a low esia, low. But if he didn't marry anyone off, we don't go and assume what he would have done. Kamash Malon, time of Rabbi Yehuda, that's Lina Batar Umdana. So that's what he's saying. The reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda is that we go after, we make an assumption for what the father would have given. Loshna hesia, it doesn't matter if he's already married someone off. Loshna lo esia, it doesn't matter if he hasn't married off someone. Hi, the Tani Hesia. Right. So why say that it's not? Why does it say it's in a case that he did marry someone off? Say when it's not. That's an even bigger chiddush. The diacha kocho de rabbanon. Ah, that teaches you the koch de rabbanon. That even in a case where he's shown us what he wants to do, we still do not follow what he had done in the past, and we assess what his possessions are and give it based on the possessions. Amalei Rav le Rav Chisda Tarshina Mishmech or Mishmecha. They darshan in your name, halacha Rabbi Yehuda, right? That the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Amalei, he says back to me, hey Rava, ki kahani mili malaisa, tidrushu mishmai, he says, hey Rava, is a hiratzon, right? Hiratzon, that what? That they should say more memras like this in my name. That's a good halacha. Umi amar Rava, hachi, can Rava ever really say such a thing? Va'atanya, Rebbe, omer, bat nizonet mina achin, no telet isur nesachim. Right, that a daughter who's eating out of the estate gets 1/10, gets 10% of the estate when she marries up, when she's married off. So what does that sound like? V'ama Rava Yochasuk Rebbe. The halacha is like Rebbe. So that sounds not like Shmuel, right? If we say the halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda, we said the Rebbe Yehuda holds what? Shaman Ba'av. We assess what the father would have given. Over here, Rava is saying the halacha is like Rebbe, that what? We just take his possessions and give her 10%. It's an automatic, you know, 10%. So Mar says, Lokasha Handa Minde Halo Adamidne. Right, that has to do with whether we can assess what the father would have given him. I mean, if he lives in this neighborhood and we know how he spent, then we can make an assessment. If he's coming to us from somewhere else or we don't know the father at all, then there's no way for us to assess what the father would have given. So in that case, we go to the standard, the objective standard, which is 10% of the possessions. So there's a case where Rebbe gave only 1/12, not 1/10. Right, so he gave less. So I said, "Kashin ahadadi." That's a problem for Rebbe. Two statements. The man says, "Lav shemami no amidne hadala amidne." Has to do with weight, whether they gave amud, whether they were able to assess him or not. If they can assess him, they give him 1/12. That's what he would have given. If not, she gets a 10th.
But there's according to Shmuel, the whole concept of you follow what the father would have given has nothing to do with really how much money he has now.
Right.
Which is not 100% correct, because you know, as generous as he is, it still should be depending on how much he has.
Right, so the Gemara is going to...
It's a fact, you could say, it's not a, you know...
But that may be, when you're shomim ba'av, you have to maybe say both. What he would have given, plus
what he has,
right? So maybe you have to look at both at that instance, not to the exclusion of the other. Meaning that
right, because I was going to give 10%, that means he's a generous person, so he gave each kid $1 million. It used to be pennies for him. Now he has only $10 million in the bank, 10%, he'll still give it, you know what I'm
saying? Right, you might have to look at both. I don't know if Shmuel says exclusively look at what he gave in the past, because the way Rabbi Yehuda stands in the mission is what he gave to the first daughter, he gives to the second daughter. It sounds irrespective of the what.
Which might be impossible.
Right, but then the Chachamim argue on him, say ani oshir, mean that he would have changed his mind. How do you know what he really would give now? So you give according to what his possessions are now and a fixed amount off the possessions, 10% of the possession. Mm-hmm. It's funny, but the Chachamim are saying to him, you don't know what he's thinking now. They don't say to him, well, maybe. Like we were learned, Henny on Ashir means that his level of possessions had changed.
Yeah, we'd love to do it, he can't do it.
Right. So Gufa Amar Rabin Bat Nizonet Mina Achin Notel Isur Nesachim Nechasim. He takes a tenth of the possessions. Amar Lo Rabbi Lidvarech Mishal Eser Banot Ubein and Lo Leben Bakum Banot Klum. What's going to happen? You give 10%. So that's, you take 100, take 10% of that, 10 each time, 100, it's gone.
It's right? 10 of the remaining.
So that's the Gemara's going to answer.
So I said, it's not, you can say for 11 daughters.
Right. I'm saying the same thing. So now what happens? I'm like, kach ani omer, rishon anotel isur nechasim, shniya b'mesh shishayra, v'shlish b'mesh shishayra. Each one gets 10% of the remainder. So the first one gets 10, will get 10 out of the 100. The second one will get 9 out of the 90. Then the last, next one will get 8.1, meaning that you go down based on what the residual is. Right, so then they go back and divide it up. Because now what's going to happen? You're going to have what? Each girl, the girls are going to get less and less. So they're almost getting cheated out of, right? So what you do is you make an assessment up front. If you have 10 daughters and you took 10% of each one and the remainder, you then pull it back and divide it 10 evenly.
Why don't I just say divide it 10 evenly? Oh, what the girls do?
Yeah, the girls, because otherwise we don't have them. So for instance, say you have three, say you have two. Let's just do it easily. If you have two. So you have two daughters. So if they take 10%, the first one would get 10. 10% for the next one, you get 9. So that second one's cheated out. So what you do is you pull them back together. You have 19, and you divide it in half. So each one gets 9.5.
Okay. And that's in order to leave for the son.
Yeah. Well, or it just makes sense. Otherwise, right. Otherwise, it just makes sense, right? I mean, that you can't say.
If not.
10% is a ratio. You can only say 10%. You can't say 10% of his original amount, because that doesn't exist anymore.
Right, but you could have said it. If you only had two daughters, you'd still leave enough money. You'd say 10 and
right.
10.
Right, but then we don't. The point is that 10% means of what his possessions are at the point that she's going for a dowry. So that's the assessment. So Gemara says, V'chod v'shavak. So Gemara says, Chochad v'chad anafshko shakla. Right, that each one gets what they get, meaning that they get the tenth at the time that they get it. So that sounds the opposite of what we were saying. Right?
No, it's a tough luck.
Right, tough luck. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So, Achi Kama. In Balkulam Lina Seika Achat, if they all come to us to ask to get married at once, right, Chokol Veshavet, then they get. But if, what? If they are coming sequentially, then they get. Whatever the circumstances when they get married, that's what they get. So Messiah the Rav Matna, the Rav Matna, in Balina Seikulam Kachanogod Isur Echad, Isur Echad. Each one gets a tenth. Sakadatcha, I mean, Isur Echad, Sakadatcha, I mean, one tenth for all of them? No. They each take off a tenth, but then they re-pool it to get the amount that each one gets. Whereas if they come sequentially, then we look. It's got to do with the time. It's the time and place. Get a tenth. I mean, it'd be the same thing if your father was alive. If he didn't have as many possessions, he wouldn't be able to give as much. So he goes up that ratio. This is almost like what you were suggesting yesterday.
It's usually go up and go down. I mean, money's invested, so...
Right. Tanu Rabbanu, although they may not be entitled to parnasa, they may not be entitled to shevach. One of the things that we don't take off once his father passed away is that you can't take out of certain things mishavach, which is what the Yisomim have done to improve the estate. Tan Rabbanu, Habanot, Ben Bagru, Achlo Nisu, Ben Nisu, Achlo Bagru, right? If they have become a Bogveret or they have gotten married, Ibdu Mizunotayim, they've lost their Mizunot. This was a Machokas Rav and Shmuel earlier on, whether it's at the point of a Rusin or a point of a Nisuin. Here the Gemara is going like, the opinion that it's nisuin that are cut them off. So if they get married, they have no mazon. V'liu ibdu parnasatan divrei Rebbe. They didn't lose their dowry. Shimon Elazar mer afi ibdu parnasam. They also lose their dowry. So the question is, once they are pushed out of the estate from getting their livelihood, making their daily living expenses paid, then do they also lose their dowry? So for instance, if she was a bogeret, right? She became a bogeret, which means that she now has to fend for herself and get her own mazonos. She now lost her ability to get from the estate her dowry. I mean, the two connected.
It seems that they're also saying that when someone gets married before they're misbag.
Right.
So how does that make any sense?
I mean, how does nisuin before they become a bogeret, why does that mean they lose their dowry? What's the case here?
That's a good question. That would be a catch. Yeah.
Right.
Maybe someone's talking about bogeret.
No, it's not. It's here. It's in Rashi. If you look in Rashi. Af ibdu parnasatam isur nechasim. What's their parnasa? It's a tenth of the possessions. The kasara lo tikin la dunya el hecha demin sabed bekatnu to benarut. That he only gives a dowry when she gets married when she's young. Aval bogra istakala mihayi beita legamrin. She's left the house. She's out fending for herself. She's made her own money now.
It's only talking about bogeres. I mean, he's right. The price itself is talking about Bulgaris and marrying Kusuma Mazonos. It's not Mazonos.
Here you go. V'chein nisei b'narut. If she gets married when she's a narus, hol v'gdolahi didratzeit, and she agreed. Meaning that our Mishnah said what? Our Mishnah said that when she got married when she was a katana, and they gave her less than the 10% for her dowry, she can come back and make a claim later on that I'm entitled to it. So this is, in this case, if she gets married when she's a Nara, where her mechila is a mechila, she can't come back and make a claim against the estate that you only gave me less than I she was entitled to. Now to ibda parnasata elamash pasku abominise bekatna lo polig. Doesn't agree. So it has to do with when she's getting married. So if she's a katana, our Mishnah says what? When she gets married, she has a right. There's no statute of limitations. She got married when she couldn't be mochel, even though she agreed to get married. Therefore, she can come back and make a claim for a dowry out of the estate. Whereas if she gets married when she's a bogeret, like you're saying, yes, so she's already out of the house, doesn't matter. So the only question is by narut. That okay, so when she's a nara and gets married and they gave her less than 10% and she agreed to take it, that agreement is final, in that she can't come back and make a claim against the estate because she accepted it and she can be mochel in that instance. All right. Ketzad. Ketzad ain't also. What do they do? Sochot lahen balin umatzin lahen parnasatan. Right, so basically, if we try to get them, meaning that, how do we solve the problem? Try to get married early, right? We hire them, meaning that we agree to agreement early on, and therefore they can get their parnosa out, meaning that we try to get them married off prior to them reaching the stage of bulgaret, so they won't lose their parnosa. According to our Bishop, the Beis Din, or whoever's in charge here, trying to help them out.
The brothers wouldn't have
right, the brothers, they don't have a vested interest in doing this, right? So it's either the apitropos of the estate or the Beis Din is going to look out for her welfare. We'll say they'll try to marry, even though she won't get married until later, but they'll try to make the agreement earlier on so she'll get her panasa, she'll be entitled to it.
It has to be an issuin also. It can't just be a long erusin.
All right. All right, so that's here it says, right, a mutzlan panasa time, that we try to marry them off early to avoid this problem.
You're trying to what?
Avoid them losing their dowry, so they want to, they do marry them off prior to reaching the point of, so basically prior to reaching 12 and a half, they'd have to try to marry them off. All right, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Li Huna Hilchos Ka Rebbe. The halacha is like Rebbe that their dowry survives, they're going to Bagrus Nisus. Eifei Rav Rav Nachman Yitoma Shisiata Ima. So what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says a Yisoma that her mother or Chia Midata B'Kafu Glameo Chamishim Zuziyicholah Hime Shitagelot Zimi Adam. Time of the katana, the only reason she can go take it out is because she's a katana. Ha gedola vitra. If she was already a gedola and she went and got married and agreed to this, she's given up on her dowry. That sounds against Rebbe, who says her dowry survives the suin and her dowry survives being bulgaret, right? Lokasha had machai had lo machai. That depends if she objected or did not object at the time. So that's because. Did she make, if she was a katana, she wouldn't have objected. So therefore we speak up for her, we say that she would have objected had she known. Right, but over here she did not object. If she did not object and she's old enough to object, then we say that's acquiescence and she can't go back and make a claim against the estate for her dowry. Okay.
So the question was what, that she was a gdola?
The question is, if she's a gdola and got married, the diok out of the Mishnah is that if she's a gdola, got married, she would lose her dowry. Right? That was what the diok out of the Mishnah, which sounds like Shimon Allah.
So she loses it, or she loses the right? They didn't give her the right amount.
Yeah, she loses the right to go back, which is a mechila. That sounds like Rabbi Shimon Allah, who says that nisuin closed the case.
Yeah, no, but didn't he say before, didn't he say that she doesn't get any dunya if she was gdola?
They gave her. That's with two cases. One is she becomes a bulgaret, she's out, she gets nothing.
That was the first.
Right. The second case is nisu. She got married, and they gave her something, and she accepted it, and she was, or if they gave her nothing, she was mochel. Either one of these cases, right? Then she has no claim back on the estate. That's Rabbi Shimon Elazar's position. So that brisa sounds exactly like Rabbi Shimon Elazar. She got married. Look, our Mishnah sounds like Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Why? Only when she's a katana do we go back and say she has a claim against the estate. Once she's a gedola, nara, she has no claim against the estate. That's exactly like Rabbi Shimon Elazar's position.
And when she becomes older, she doesn't say anything.
Right. That's the deal out of our mission. That only when she's a katana does she have a right to go back to the estate. But once she reaches the time of gedola, she won't have a right to go back. That is Rabbi Shimon Elazar's position.
Is that our mission?
Our mission said katana. So the deal is that a gedola wouldn't work this way. That's exactly the deal out of the mission. Mishitagdil, but she got married when she was a ketana.
Right, she got married when she was married, so it's mashma.
What happens if she got married when she was a gdola? It's mashma that she has no right to go back, which is Rabbi Shimon Elazar.
Ah, no, it's the answer. But it shows you that when she's a gdola, she has a right. Mm-hmm. But if she accepts, then she was mechila.
Right, so that's what the Rabbi Shimon Elazar's opinion is. That's what we just read in Rashi, that when she is nara and accepts it, that is a mechila, and she can't go back on it.
Right.
So that sounds like Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So the Gemara says, no, it's even Rabbi, but it has to do with whether she objected or not. At the time of marriage, did she make a statement of objection? So when she's a ketana, we don't expect her to make that because it's she's too young or she doesn't feel like she's in a position to do that, right? But if she's already a nara, where she can speak up for herself, then if she does not object, then she doesn't have a right to come later on and object and say something. Otherwise, you have a problem in Rebbe's position. At the time, Rebbe Omer Batan Yisod Min Ha'achin. A daughter who is nizonet from the brother is notelet isron nechasim. She gets tenth of the dowry. Nizonet in, she nizonet lo. Only if they're feeding her, she gets it. If she's not feeding her, no. Elalav shmeim no. Adamachai, adalamachai. Must be a case where she objects or doesn't object, right? So if she's going to get married, and what does it mean she doesn't have nizonets anymore? She got married, so that her husband is feeding her, so she doesn't have nizonets. So does she lose her dowry or not lose her dowry? So that depends on whether she objects or doesn't object. Okay, if she is eating, in the case where the two brises of Rebbe, one brise and Rebbe says what, she's entitled to her panasa even after nisuin. That's in a case where she objected at the moment of marriage, she objected, and therefore they didn't give it to her, so she is entitled to go back and make a claim against the estate. If she does not object at the time she's a naro and getting married, right, then she is what? No longer entitled to panasa, and that's what Rebbe says. When she's already off the doles, meaning that she's being fed by her husband, not by the estate anymore, she's not entitled to a dowry. That's a case where she did not object at the point of marriage to get the remainder of her dowry out of the estate. Shmamina. Okay, Amar le Ravina le Rav, Amar le Chor Rav Adar Ba'ava Mishmech, Bogra Ein Tzricha Limchot. She became a Bogeret, she doesn't have to be in Mocha. Niseit Ein Tzricha Limchot. And if she got married, she doesn't have to object. Bogra V'Niseit Tzricha Limchot. If she both was a Bogeret and got married, then she has to object. So Mar says, "Remember Rav Hachi, va eight vei Rav the Rav Nachman yitone ma b'shani leit hadamachi hadalomachi." Isn't Rav the one who answered up for Rebbe? That has to do whether she objected or didn't object. In the case in our Mishnah, where she gets married and she's a ketana or a nara, we're not talking about where she's a bogeret, where she has two deficits, right? She has two strikes against her. Here, according to this price, or according to what Rav is saying, is when she has two strikes against her, she's a bogeret and getting married, then she has no claim against the estate for her dowry. But if she has only one of them, she does have a claim against the estate. Right? But it's saying here that even if she does not object, Rebbe, we just set up Rebbe, that was only a case where she did object that it works. Lokasha had the ka mitnazan minayu had look mitnazan minayu. Has to do with what her status is now. Right? Is she eating from them or not? So listen to this. Dama Rova, look in Rashi, ha, right across from where we are in the Gemara, ha. Dama Rova, nisei benarut, ain't tzricha limchos. If she gets married when she's a nara, she does not have to object. So that's against what we just set Rebbe up for. Rebbe, we just said she does have to object. So go on to commit zaminayu l'achar shenises. Even after she's married, she's still taking food out of the estate. Shum to kamizit naminayu hu to koshatko. Because she's getting fed out of the estate, she's too scared to say something. Why? V'lo machla parnasata. Because what? The reason she doesn't want to speak up and say, I want my full dowry is because she's afraid they'll cut her off from Mizonos.
Why is she really getting Mizonos?
I guess her husband can't afford it. Or
so they don't know what to make credit give it. She says, I want to rock the boat. So
right, exactly. So in that case, we don't say that the Mechila is an admission that she doesn't want her dowry anymore.
She's still connected.
Right, she's still connected to them, therefore she can go back and claim her panasa. But the case like Rebbe, which we said above, that a Naru gets married, loses her entitlement.
It's a real case.
Right, the case is the Mizonos are done, and she's no connection to them, so she can make her claim. If she doesn't make her claim, then she's out of luck. So I wrote, Rebbe, Parnasa Eina Ketanai. Eina Ketanai Ksuba. It's not like the condition of the Ksuba. My Eina Ketanai Ksuba. What does it mean it's not like the Ketanai Ksuba? Ine Medilu Parnasa Tarfa Mimshabdei. The Parnasa you can take out of encumbered property. It's not Ksuba, Lo Tarfa Mimshabdei. My Kamashmalon. What are you telling us? Hamasim Mechol Yom Motzim the Parnasa Veimotzim Mizonos. That's an obvious thing that you take out of Mishabdei and you don't take out of Mizonos. So just so you know here, Mishabdei does not mean that the father sold off property. Because both Ksai Ksuba and Dowrei, it's only talking about when the brothers sold off property. That's meaning that the Mishabdei is Shibdu Otam Lo Shibdu Av. Right? That the Achim were Mishabdei, not the father. father sold it off, then only a ksuba can be taken out of that, not the tnai ksuba and not the parnasa. That can be taken out of that. But if the brothers, after the estate, where she
became a chob,
right, exactly, very good. It's a chob on the estate, and they go sell it, then she has a lien to go take it back out. So we see already, what do you need Rebbe to come along and teach us that mizonos don't come out of mishavde, but parnasa does? We see it, it's a common practice. We don't need Rebbe to teach us that. Ve'ela de'ilu parnasa gavya nami mimitaltale. The parnasa can also be taken out of metal today. But that's to suggest that what? That the tnai ksuba only come out of karka and not metal today? Right? The Rebbe, idim mikva gavyo. But we can take both of them out of metal today. Why? Titania, echa nechas mcheshla nachrayut, which means real property, meaning karka. Echa nechas mcheshla nachrayut, also what? Non real property, meaning that metal today. Right? Movable property. Motzin lamazana isha labonos, divri rabbi. Right, so that what you can see, even for mizonos, we let her take out mizonos, which are a lower level. We let her take out the dowry and take out of metaltalin and karka. So certainly, koshekin a dowry. So it can't be that's the differential that Rebbe's after. But my parnasa ain't a ketanai ksuba. What does it mean that the ketanai ksuba? The ketanya we have a brisa. Omer ayizono benotav minichasav ain't shomim lo. Person before he dies says my daughters cannot eat. I can't get out of it. Ayin Shomen Lo, you can't listen to him because, right, it's Tnai Ksuba, Tnai Bezdin, they're entitled and you can't unroot that. Ayin Parnasu Benotam Nechasim Shomim Lo. But if he says, what? That it's not, they're not allowed to get their dowry, then it's a Parnasinik Tnai Ksuba. It's not like Tnai Ksuba, but rather what? It's up to him, right? Because it's not a Chov Lo. The dowry is not a Chov, and therefore it's not. Tnai Ksuba and Ksuba were entered in with his wife and they become an obligation. So he can't undo the obligation because part of the Ksnai Ksuba, when he signed the Ksuba, was that he's going to feed his daughters. Now he can't come and change the conditions of his Ksuba later on. But Parnasa, dowry, is a choice of a father that he makes during his lifetime. It's not something that is part of the Ksuba. That's what he's saying. It's not part of Ksnai Ksuba. So he's not obligated to give his dowry. Parnasa, that's a choice that a father makes to give dowry.
But it is something because we have to focus, you know, how much he has to give, which means clearly he has to give something once he's dead.
We're talking in a case where he didn't explicitly say don't give them.
No, I'm saying it's not like his goodwill when he's alive. I mean, it's
he's not obligated to give. If he didn't give his first daughter,
right?
What are you going to say?
But it's something. It's like somewhere in between. I mean, it's not like something that you know, like a present. You know, like they give you a present. It's something that's some.
Well, there is a connection.
There's a connection.
Right, because we do assume that a person in general will give their daughter a dowry. Yeah. But if he comes out explicitly and says,
no,
I'm not giving daughter after my death, then it's off. They're out. Because he was never obligated.
Yeah, but it doesn't say anything. So it's not like he has to say give it. If it doesn't
say
anything.
Right. The default is that you give.
Yeah, you give it. But unless he says no, then.
If he says no, but then he can undo it because there's no obligation to give.
Right.
Okay.